Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome back to the Ruby After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight we are talking about Volume 6, Episode 3, The Lost Fable. We're going to be breaking down this giant lore dump, guys. It's going to be a great time. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
I feel like this is a what day is it sort of episode. Like,
welcome
what
to
is
the
time?
Exactly, what is time?
I don't know. Speaking of, happy Thanksgiving, everybody!
Happy Thanksgiving! Woo!
We have a lot to break down tonight, talking about the Lost Fable. Let's not waste any time. Let me introduce my fantel. My panel to my left, Mark Donica.
I'm one of the Fanta girls, Mark B. Donica.
To his left, Stacey Shuttle.
Hello, hello.
And I'm part of the Pantastic panel. I'm Katie.
Yeah.
I'm grape, by the way.
I'll be pineapple.
Yeah.
And I'm Tammy. No, I'm Megan. You guys can.
And I'm a car.
We don't have time, sadly, to go into a bunch of goofs. We are actually pre-taping this episode. We are taping this a little bit early because the studio is closed on Wednesday night. However, because this is the future, we can tell you that a few of us are in the live chat right now.
How can any of us be in chat when we're not even touching our phones? We're doing time travel of our own.
We are. So we are going to be joining you guys in the live chat. So we want to hear what you guys had to say about this episode because it is a doozy. That's for sure. And also, if you guys have other thoughts but are following along on Twitter, go ahead and use the hashtag RTReviews. Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to fan art because that is so, so, so fun.
Mm. Yeah.
Getting to see everybody's do fan art like while we're doing the show live.
Yeah.
So that's always a joy. So go ahead, use the hashtag, use the live chat. We love you guys. We hope you all have a lovely, safe Thanksgiving this week. So, yeah, let's go ahead and what were our initial thoughts? Because, oh my gosh, I think this is the episode we've been waiting for literal years.
I think pre-episode thoughts were, why is this 26 minutes? And post-episode thoughts were, the gods are dicks.
Mm. Man, this was the thing that we had hoped for so long but never actually expected to get, and here it is. And we had so many questions answered, but there are so many more.
We know what happened to the moon.
Did we break even? Do we have less questions now?
I still feel like we have more questions. I feel like answering what happened to the moon tipped the scales pretty good.
That was the most important question.
Just the moment.
The moon moment. I liked how the episode felt longer than the runtime because it was very dense.
Yes.
And never thought we would see the gods, but here we are. There's so much to unpack, but I think with any episode like this, there's a lot of discussion of it. I'm happy that they pulled the trigger because this is the plot is also a gun. I'm happy that they did it because a lot of these questions are ones that, as a content creator, I would be a little afraid to ask because after 6 volumes, everybody has their own ideas, and now it's, no, this is the story. So very brave of them to brazenly, openly present everything. Next to everything.
Okay.
A lot.
I mean, fans are used to getting jossed all the time.
Yes, but you know the Voltron fandom.
That's the Voltron fandom, though. Ruby's a little better behaved.
It depends on the day.
I mean, our fans in chat are.
Yeah,
our fans are amazing.
We love you guys. You guys are the best. For me...
Especially you, Malachroma. I'm sure you said something really witty by now.
No, for me, it's... this is the episode I've been waiting for, because ever since we were introduced to the concept of Salem, like, it's been like, okay, I want to know the story of the Wicked Witch. Tell me the story of the Wicked Witch and how she relates to Ozpin. And that's exactly what we got. We got, it provided context for all of their interactions up until this point. Like, it completely explains how when he died, she kind of knew it was only sort of a temporary thing. And, like, it explains so much why Ozpin keeps things so close to the chest. It's because, ultimately,
the rapture is happening.
Yeah, it is one of those fate of the world things, but against an enemy that you can't kill. So it's, for me, that was, this was, it's like, okay, this provides so much needed context. It doesn't justify his actions, but it's like, oh, here's the context that we've been needing.
But it gives us a finish line. Yeah. Like, we had a general idea of what was happening, and then the relics came into being, and we're like, okay, cool.
We're like, cool, but MacGuffins.
We still didn't have, oh, hey, this is the end. And they showed us the finish line. We don't know how long it is till we get there, but it's a very interesting thing to do 6 seasons into a show. We know how it has to end.
And again, the finish line is Judgment Day. The finish line is the rapture. The finish line is the apocalypse. There's so many references you could make here, but the finish line is essentially mankind is either shaping up or shipping out. And by shipping out, we mean genocide part 2. So, what is it with Rooster Teeth stories and genocide?
Noticing a pattern, Miles.
I don't want to see it come to Camp Camp.
I was going to say, then it shows up at Camp Camp and we're all like,
Well,
no thanks.
Before we dig too deep into the episode, we have a quick announcement for you guys.
That's right. After Buzzers, our network produces after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows, from dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, professional wrestling, and more. There is no network that works harder to serve television fans, but we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to these channels, YouTube will suggest content that is tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't worry. They're optional. I'd appreciate it if you click that little bell. So hit that subscribe button now for AfterBuzz TV Animation, and check out all of our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we will thank you on air. We're not going to tonight because we have a hell of a lot to talk about, but thank you so much for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV Talk.
Y'all are great. And also, while we're in the process of making announcements, if you guys haven't already done so, please go to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you. It's the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. And we love giving shout-outs to people who've done so as well.
That we will do. we'd like to thank KPD2010, who, as of this reading, did this like 12 hours ago. So thank you very much. You guys are the best. 5-star rating, of course, because the other stars are broken. I have been listening to this podcast since Ruby Volume 1, and I've loved every minute. You four are hilarious. Whoever the sound guy is rocks.
Yeah!
And you come up with the best theories and observations I've ever heard across the podcast universe. Keep it up. Wow. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was wonderful. Hope to have some more of those for you later this episode.
Yeah. We love you guys. You guys are great. And we know we have an international audience as well. So if you guys happen to be in the non-American iTunes store, take a screen cap, put in the hashtag.
Or Google Play.
Yeah.
Or any of the other places podcasts are sound.
Yes. Stitcher, all that stuff. Yeah. Take a screen cap, put in the hashtag. We want to give you guys a shout out too, because you guys mean the world to us and you're the best. All right. Guys, Salem. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, was this the Orpheus myth? It's that very archetypal princess locked away in a tower and she's waiting for her white knight to come and save her.
I think for Orpheus, it was the girl who died and the guy screwed up getting her back.
No, that's right. But I'm trying to remember what the, it's kind of, Django Unchained is also, like, kind of loosely
I mean,
interpretation
we all know the princess
one.
In the tower, but yeah. We don't need to know the name. Yeah.
I believe this was covered in the fabled story of Shrek. I think Salem represents Princess Fiona and Ozma, of course, with all of the green being our titular Shrek.
You know, somebody once told me that.
I mean, I saw her face. I was a believer.
Okay. Yeah, the Orpheus part of this was definitely failing to bring one's loved one back to life. But Orpheus's problem was that he looked back too soon. Salem's problem. Yeah.
Salem has a few, now, as it turns out, and she only made more.
Now, I do have to ask, guys, what were your initial thoughts on seeing the original sort of Salem and Ozma as they originally started out in life?
Aww. It was very sweet then.
Yeah.
Just waiting for it all to go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this is nice. How long until it all falls apart?
About a minute and a half.
There's a part of me that wants to see, like, what adventures they went on when they were young and in love and before he got sick and died.
I'd like to think that he brought her out of the tower. They had, like, a week, and then he, like, died from the common cold 2 days later.
That makes all of the trouble she goes through even more intense.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure that wasn't the case, but that's kind of what I like to think, because what is time?
She wanted to know what love is. She wanted him to show her.
Oh. She learned a few things, but it was a few things she probably should not have learned.
Well, it's like, as soon as we realize that, for me, it vindicated Ozpin in a lot of ways, because I've looked at him as a liar and a charlatan throughout most of this series, and here, seeing him as the sort of stalwart hero, that, you know, the person who went to save her, not because he wanted, you know, to
her.
Not because he wanted to win the princess, but because it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that surprised me a lot.
For me, it was...
Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
All right. Still, it's a case of storytelling where we are being told. We're not living it. So even though it's from a third party who knows all, it's still sort of a thing of, I couldn't necessarily feel for it, because it was like, look, they're in love. Well, we didn't.
And now he's dead.
So we didn't see a scene of them meet. This is a lot of information, and they did the best they can with what they could. So I hope we get a little bit more actual dialogue, because the only scenes that we got with them were at the end of the relationship. So it's important to be able to follow those relationships if we can empathize with them a little bit more. So yeah, that's how I felt about it.
Honestly, I think the scenes at the end of the relationship helped sell the beginning of the relationship more to me.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, I guess especially since we were told in such a brusque fashion. They met, they fell in love, and they had great adventures.
Except for the part where he died.
That was kind of, you know, a low point in their life.
You exploded. You really need to stop doing that.
It was. So, sadly, Ozma dies, and there's nothing she could do about it. But, you know, just like you would think of anybody in love, like, why, God, why did this happen? She actually has somewhere she can go to get an answer. And so she travels to the domain of the God of Light and asks him to bring Ozma back. Now, what follows is we get introduced to the God of Light and the God of Darkness in very quick succession. Mark, what did you think of the dichotomy between the two? Because they had very different entrances.
the visual parallels were interesting. The fact that we focused so much on the dragon continent in the top left and weren't like, oh, there's a Chinese dragon in the bottom right-hand corner. Holy crap. That just over my brain. It was hard for me focus. Yeah. Yeah. It was hard for me to focus the first time, because I was trying to figure out who the voice of the God of Light was, because it sounded just like Talos and Jaffe to me, because I hear his voice for 4 hours every week. So it's hard to be like, that sounds like you, but it wasn't. But I liked the presentation of the high and the low. With the God of Darkness, we see him in just not only like wriggling and writhing like
contortionism.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And I lost my thought. I lost my thought. Continue.
Stacey?
Yeah, that was an interesting juxtaposition, I think. And slightly terrifying the first time like that happened. Very reminiscent of some of the Grimm that we've seen. So very well tied together there.
It very much reminded me of the Nuklevi.
Yep.
That was a whole lot of not okay. And The part where I went from, okay, this is terrifying, I never want to see him again, to, I kind of like this, was legit when he turned into a dragon. Because in terms of their dragon forms, like the design of the God of Light is your kind of your usual Chinese dragon, looks good. The design of the God of Darkness was great. Like, I don't know why that one stood out to me so much more, but I absolutely loved it. And then when they found out that Salem was trying to play mom and dad against each other, it wasn't, well, I did this anyway, it was, I owe you an apology then. Sorry, didn't know that. Let me just kill a man and make it better.
That was something that surprised me a lot, too, because, you know, the gods seemed very quick to anger, but in line with the fable we were presented with in Volume 4, you know, they can come to an agreement and an understanding, and that's where we're at when Salem comes to them, is that they're still in the middle of this, like, we made this world together sort of thing. And that surprised me when learning the truth. He was like, oh, brother, I'm so sorry. And then what precedes was this horrible duck. What was right before that was this horrible duck season, rabbit season sort of timing bit of killing Ozma and then resurrecting him and then killing him again. It was like, it's borderline hilarious, but it's all, you actually think about what he's going through, and it's like, that's horrifying.
Something that I was thinking of is, how long has he been dead? Because it wasn't like she teleported and was in the realm of the God of Light. So he's been dead. How long did it take for her to figure out, oh, I can appeal to the gods, get there, and where is Oz's consciousness coming from? Like, how, like, where is that time? Because the reaction of where am I, what's going on, just being pulled presumably from nothing and back from being dying to completely alive is terrifying. And that's something that should be noted. Like, he seemingly didn't want any of this.
No.
See, and we confirmed an afterlife, wow, words, in the later conversation with the God of Light. And also, when the God of Light turns Salem down, his last words to her before she seeks out his little brother are, let him rest. Not let him go. Let him rest.
But that, I don't know if it's a confirmation of the afterlife, because again, time. Because there's time from him being killed for the last time again, and then Salem going to all of the kingdoms, assembling all of the kingdoms, the eradication of human life, that conversation, and then all of a sudden human life is back and Oz is back. That's hundreds of years, presumably,
it's in between. It's more that Oz straight up says, I'd like to go back to the afterlife.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily, because he didn't necessarily back to the afterlife, because, like, his consciousness, he wasn't aware of what was going on, and the God of Light could have just preserved his consciousness.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm going to hang on to that for later.
Yeah.
This whole thing is just life sucks, and then you die, and then you come back, and then you die again, and then you come back, and you can't die. Like, wow.
But, I mean, you touched on it, Mark. They both turn her down. They kill Ozma dead, and then she goes, well, actually, I have another thought. And, yeah, amasses this army because the hearts of men are easily swayed.
Well, point of contention, they punish her to make her, they make her immortal first to punish her. Mm-hmm. Like, until you learn the value of life and death, you will walk this earth.
Specifically, and we'll bring this up later in the show, as long as this world is turning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very specifically.
So she's like, so I either have to wait until the world is destroyed or until I learn a lesson. Let me get those relics.
There we go. Like the first one was, yeah, chance of redemption from the gods once you learn the value of life and death. Once she raises an army and they have a full-on genocide apocalypse, then it turned into, nah, you're stuck here.
But maybe this is my Slytherin side showing, but, like, I get where she's coming from. Mm-hmm. They, like, she, you know, out of spite, you know, she's cursed with immortality. And then, you know, she realizes, like, oh, the gods are fallible. They're not all-knowing. They have flaws, and they can be led astray. maybe, just maybe, they can be defeated as well, or at the very least, made to hurt. And, like, so she goes on this quest 100% out of spite.
Mm. See, like, she could have learned. The fact that we get that bit of narration, she went around cursing every single thing, but never herself. She went for spite and the gods are fallible before she went for, maybe I shouldn't have messed with the gods when I was told no. Like, no. I don't know if she doesn't have the capacity for self-reflection or if she chose not to. Given her actions, I would lean a lot more towards chose not to. And we all know those people who think they are right all the time and will not hear a word otherwise.
Well, it's true she's arrogant, but in her defense, as we talked about, the gods are dicks.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they were actively dicks until she went and messed with them.
Yeah, I mean, because realistically, it's not unreasonable for the God of Light to have denied her request.
Yeah,
like, of course. That was a completely reasonable thing for him to do. And the fact that she then went, no, that's not okay, I'm going to find someone who's going to do it for me. She kind of brought that down upon herself. Mm-hmm. However, the gods choosing to make her immortal as a punishment to this woman who has already, like, tried to go around one of their backs and is already, like, pitting them against each other. Not the brightest move on their part.
I don't, but at the same time, we haven't spent enough time with Salem Prime, as it were, to understand these decisions, because we were being told the story as opposed to experiencing her and her life, because I think we could understand her a little bit more if we got more time with the two of them.
Now,
and there's time for that.
That. You bring up a good point with that, because there's a lot of narration in this episode. Do you feel like, I feel like visually speaking, what they did with this episode in terms of the different members of Team Ruby appearing and reappearing in different points of the frame, like, I thought it was very, very clever. And the asset creation for this episode, absolutely spectacular. But because it leans so heavily on narration, which, again, great performance by Colleen.
Hell yeah.
Fantastic. But because it leans so heavily on narration, that does lean into tell instead of show. Granted, they are being told a story, but do you think this episode would have been better served if it just served as a flashback 100% from Salem's point of view with maybe minimal narration at the top and the bottom?
But that's the problem, is if you hear narration from Salem or from Ozma, that story is already...
Oh, I meant narration from Jin.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying, is if either of the characters told the story, you could already dismiss it as, well, is that actually what happened? Mm-hmm. But this episode is a season. This is a season of Ruby, without a shadow of a doubt, that they compressed into an episode. So the only thing that... So I love that we got to see the various members of our heroes seeing it. We didn't see Maria
at all
watching it, which I think will come back in some way, shape, or form. Because what if she's just standing there in the snow while everybody else is like...
having a trip.
Wandering and tripping.
Are you okay?
Yeah. I like the idea of her like going back to the train coach and like grabbing her bag and being like, I'm sorry, I left my purse. Did I miss anything? Yeah.
But ultimately, it was very important, the various members of the team that were watching at those moments. But I want to watch this story from every single team member's perspective, because all of the reactions, we haven't seen how the team is reacting overall, but I want, because everybody's going to react to something different, and everybody did. Weiss seemed very compassionate to the story that was being told. Yang was just mad that she didn't know it. Like it seems. I want to watch it almost like in VR. Like that would be a hell of an experience if we could be in that story as it was being told. RTX 2019.
Swords thrown at us and everything.
Yeah.
I did notice that Oscar only showed up twice. Once after Ozma took the deal and once at the very end. Like, I was watching for that. Mm-hmm. And I love that they did that.
Excellent. By the way, excellent use of, like, in terms of sound, at what points Shannon was doing the voice of Oz versus when it was Oscar's voice. Mm-hmm. It was like,
yeah,
I was
Aaron Dimske, I believe.
I believe so. But I thought it was interesting that original Ozma was Oscar's voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, so it's interesting when we get the, flip.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Should we talk about the deal with the not devil?
Yeah. Like, let's talk about that. The, so yes, Ozpin gets resurrected. And, yeah, his consciousness gets pulled out of either the afterlife or the void. We don't know which.
God's pocket.
And the God of Light has a proposal for him. He's just like, hey, you can either go back, and get reincarnated, and, you know, do basically accomplish this task that I'm giving to you, which is basically making sure that mankind is ready for judgment. This was a fun experiment. We wiped out everybody. Didn't see it ending that way. so, yeah, you want to do that? And Oz says, no, I'd rather just die so I can be with my beloved. And the God of Light goes, about that.
So
I want to ask, guys, is this a good thing? And I guess that brings us into our weekly segment. Should we break his legs?
Yeah.
Break their legs!
As we've established, the gods are dicks. Mm. This was a dick move.
This is the moment where I can agree that the God of Light is a dick.
Oh, yeah.
Because the God of Darkness was acting in defiance of his brother, seemingly justified, and I'm saying that as a younger brother. but we didn't necessarily see anything in the God of Darkness's actions other than the repeated killing of Ozma that made him more of a dick than the God of Light.
Like, which is interesting because I'm pretty sure he was the one that destroyed all of humanity, but was only after being attacked with magic, and he's like,
with his gift.
Like, what?
I mean, a slight overreaction, but a logical course for a god, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they waged war against the gods. They put their flag in the ground, and the gods went, yeah, okay, and burned that sucker down. Can't really blame them.
I guess.
I can for a genocide, but also.
I feel. Guys. But this was. He could have picked anybody, but he picked the one person who would be emotionally compromised when it came to this immortal. But I guess one could argue that he's the one person that could teach Salem that lesson that she needed to learn.
But I think he's the one guy that the God of Light remembered. Like, boy, there's been a bunch of humanity. Who was that guy?
Who was that?
That the girl was really into him. Ozma. All right, I remember him. All right, let's do this.
So it was just like literally who? Gosh, I don't know anyone's name. I know one name, and that's
I saw that guy like 3 times. Right?
That guy,
he's a hero.
That guy I killed twice.
I remember him. I had to kill him twice.
So this is a bit in predictions territory, but you don't have to hit the plug. So we rewatched the episode today, and I was going to say friend of the show, your husband, brought up a very interesting point that I illustrated earlier. So Oz seemingly has the ability to control time, as we saw at the end of season 3 when he was fighting Cinder with the super fast stabby motions. His ability to control time, move it really fast. What if he has the ability to stop it, which would stop the world from turning?
Ooh.
Which would give an opportunity to stab Salem through the heart and kill her. Because the very specific wording, as the world keeps turning.
I like that. I like that theory.
The only issue with that is that Jin straight up told him that he couldn't destroy her.
That Ozpin couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Genies are very specific. Yeah. They're like lawyers. Yeah.
It's like a monkey's paw scenario.
I don't think that Ozpin is going to do it. I think by going into somebody so young and there still being the disparity between the two of them, there are still moments where Oscar is Oscar and Ozpin is Ozpin. I think Oscar is going to do it, not Ozpin.
That's a cool theory.
Yeah?
Stacey?
No, I think it is a really cool theory, but do we want to put Oscar through that?
Oscar doesn't have a choice.
No, I know.
Oscar is hosed.
Well, I know. It brings up a good point, because when Ozpin does return, or Ozma, he returns, they start a family together. And guys, what do we see? Four little girls. Mm. They're possibly the original maidens.
I mean, the color of their dresses were aligned,
yeah,
with the season.
Now,
they also stop a family together.
They did kill their children.
Yep.
Oops. Yep. Now, I do want to ask, because those were the only magical beings besides the two of them, do we think that the fable that was given to us about the old man and the maidens was just that, a kind of metaphor, a fable about, you know, them creating magic and then after their children died, the power just going out into the world, or, you know, one of the lives where Oz was trying to forget his task, where he actually came across actual people and then bestowed his gift upon them. So is the fable a metaphor, or is it these kids? This is where it comes from.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was some form of fact, if he did that in remembrance of his daughters. Like, that would not at all surprise me.
Yeah, if he was kind of feeling reminiscent and thinking about his daughters and all the opportunity that they had and that they had lost and kind of wanted to recreate that.
I think a combination of the curses of the two of them created a situation where that magic had to go somewhere. So I think it's possible that that magic went to other people upon their death, but I think it's also possible that he bestowed it. But we don't know enough about magic of, can original magic users bestow magic? We only know that the gods can do that. Yeah. So
I might be misremembering, but I think Ozpin established that he could because he gave Crow and Raven the ability to turn into birds.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, we still don't know 100% if that magic that they created, if it went somewhere, if it was just gone when their children died. Which, by the way, that's probably the most devastating part of this episode, yeah. Is that they had a family together. The look on Salem's face when her little girl, like, runs in and has the ability to use magic. Salem's so proud. She's like, "Aw, my baby."
Mm. Aww. More so, I'm terrified of the implication that dust is the magical remains of the planet before, being the people and anything that had any sort of magic imbued into it, which makes the Schnee Dust Company death dealers.
Basically, Soylent Green is people.
Hmm?
I love it. I love it so much. Soylent Dust is people.
Spoiler alert, I guess, for the Full Metal Alchemist movie, for the original series.
Spoiler alert.
Wow!
It's been out for years.
But like, watching that and finding out that, like, the power of alchemy is the souls from another universe, it was like, whoa! That's unpleasant. It was like, I don't have fun watching them do alchemy anymore.
Okay, but Conqueror of Shambhala was weird.
Just all soul juice.
I mean, it was also kind of soul juice when they started doing the Philosopher's Stone, and we're back to genocide.
but, yeah, so he gathers up the relics and asks Jin how, you know, he finds the other locations of the other relics and asks how he can defeat Salem. And as you pointed out, he asked very specifically how he can defeat Salem.
Yeah.
And the answer is you can't. Mm-hmm. Now, again, this basically sets up why people have turned their backs on him. It's learning that Salem can't be killed. Like, that's why Lionheart, and probably Raven as well, went, okay, cool, bye, Oz! There's no stopping her, and she wants to bring about the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no winning this fight.
The only way to win this fight is to create peace amongst people. And we have horrifying racism against the Faunus, and we have wars, and we've got just, you know, all sorts of fun stuff that happens because humans, like the gods, are also dicks. So, it's gotta be hard. You saddled him with a ridiculously difficult task and an adversary who can't be killed. Problems.
Stacey?
Oh, yeah.
Osmond really got the short end of the stick.
He did! And so, okay, when he first made the choice to go back, is it because he wanted to go and save the world? Was that the primary objective? Or no. Was it just because Salem was still out there?
Oh, yeah.
So this dedication, like, this bold hero that he was when we met him at the very beginning of this story, had kind of morphed into something different by the time he was brought back for this huge world, like, important mission. So he was back for Salem's sake.
It's ironic that he finds love when he's acting out of selflessness. But then when he's acting out of love, it brings about, you know, ruin. Yeah.
What a weird thing to try to get across.
Also, the power of love is bullshit.
Also, I hope I wasn't the only person that when he was walking up to thing, they call her the witch and this and that. I was like, Belinda. Melinda, excuse me. Not our friend Belinda, but Melinda from Nomad of Nowhere.
Yes!
They even had the eye as the window. And I was like, he's everywhere. And then the crown
of
the
little scarecrow outside.
The crown of knowledge. I was like, what's happening? Is it happening now? Are we doing Nomad and Ruby?
I mean, that's endgame. One of the relics is a crown, so is El Rey.
I did like that we got to see what relic corresponded with what feature. That creation's a staff, destruction's a sword, choice is a crown, and knowledge is the lantern.
Creation looks like a paintbrush to me.
Did I went back and looked at, like, initially to me it looked like a spear, but it had a lot of, like, I definitely read that as a staff. Mm.
But I thought they took the school emblems from the
relic
gimmicks, the relics. Mm. That's what I thought.
I have no idea.
Mm. Huh? We'll have to rewatch.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, that's theories. We'll get to theories.
We talked about it a little bit before the show, but when Ozma comes back, there are Faunus. And we also had a little bit of a discussion about what are semblances in the absence of magic. Are semblances some sort of genetic remnant of the ability to use magic? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Thoughts? Guys, where did the Faunus come from in all this?
I kind of don't want to think about it. I have no idea.
Well, and we got no information about how the gods kind of decided to reboot life, or even why they decided to reboot life. It was just, oh yeah, here, there's people.
Humanity
again.
Life just found a way.
Well, and yeah, so, and if that's what happened, like, if the gods actually didn't just be like, okay, humanity's back, here you go, then maybe as humanity kind of reformed and repopulated, that inherent magic just, it's not as abundant as before, and it's not, you know, overpowered or added to, but there is still something there that produced the semblances.
Mm-hmm. And also, the world was destroyed with magic. It might just be the background radiation of everything.
Mm. There's just so much magic in the ground that it, seeps out.
Yeah, it's the life stream.
Like, there's so many. Yep.
Mark, any thoughts about...
We're running out of time.
Yeah,
so
we are. So we're running short on time. Any final thoughts on the episode before we delve into some really rapid-fire predictions?
I think we should just skip.
All right. Instead of final thoughts, let's go ahead and dip into predictions.
AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Dig into predictions. It's been a long day, guys. I think that there is a reason that teams at Huntsman and Hunter schools are done in teams of four, especially if Oz founded all this madness. And I think that that definitely has to do with the relics, using them, wielding them, bringing them together at the appropriate time, spreading the responsibility across a stable team, as opposed to it all being on the shoulders of one very old, very tired man.
So, and I think it's going to be interesting to see, who starts looking more critically at Jin's words to see, like, okay, well, you were told this very specifically, if they'll ever kind of be like, no, there's got to be a workaround. We're going to figure it out. And how we're going to move forward from this knowledge. And how we're going to deal with Ozpin after this big revelation.
Mm-hmm. Gods are dicks. So I think what they presented to Ozma isn't the entire truth.
Of course not.
You know, sorry, I forgot what I was going to say. Please continue.
For me, I'm going to go with Silver Eyes. Because at no point...
Silver Eyes seem to have the ability to combat magic. I'm like, okay, and if magic is a gift from the gods, then where does that leave Silver Eyes? So that's my thought, is I think Ruby is the key. And maybe that's not really much of a prediction because she's the main character, but I think Ruby is the key to Salem's undoing, whether that's through the power of her silver eyes or if it's just the fact that she is an honest soul, as Oz described her at the very beginning of the series. I feel like if anybody could probably get through to somebody so angry and arrogant, it would be Ruby. I don't know if the key to defeating Salem really is finding a way to kill her. I really think it's making her learn her lesson. Again, if there's anybody who can do that, my money would be on Ruby.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
Anyway, that's my thought. Do we have any final thoughts before we wrap on up?
I think that was about it. The gods abandoned their starter home to a guy and want him to fix it up before they move back in.
Dicks. Anyway, cool. Well, thank you to everybody who joined us tonight. Look forward to joining you all in the live chat. Hope you all have a lovely Thanksgiving. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can follow me all over the social medias, as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you like reactions to Rooster Teeth stuff, they live on that YouTube channel.
Hey guys, I'm Stacey Shells. You can find me all over the web at Stacey Shells. You can also find me over at Twitch TV at InventoryFullPT. Mark and I just did a show on Season 3 and the My Hero Academia movie, as well as One's Justice. So check that out over on our channel. We're also going to be playing One's Justice throughout the week, so keep an eye on that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff coming out. Smash Brothers is coming out in a couple of weeks. I did some Super Nintendo stuff last week. It's a whole bunch of fun. Make sure to follow us there. You can follow me on Twitter, Mark Budonica. Follow all of us at The Rooster Team. Go to tpublic.com/TheRoosterTeam to help support any of our independent stuff that we do. We also have a YouTube channel where we post clips and fun stuff if we have it. Fun stuff, if we have it, it gets posted there. That's a hint. But we thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. If you're traveling or not, we appreciate you coming by on this Wednesday night. We wanted to make sure that we had a show for you. We'll be back at the same time next week.
Yeah, we are thankful for you guys this year. So thank you all so much. And I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Thank you all so, so much for watching. We'll dust you later.
Well, that's, we're doing that now.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Moni Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.